now that we're done talking about the rules of the game, I just want to bring up another thing that's tangentially related. Okay, so from time to time, we're going to come across movies on this list that I don't feel are worthy of a spot on the 250 greatest of all time list. So I'm here to announce that FlixWise is going to create its own separate addendum or alternate list of greatest of all time. What I'd really like is if listeners would write and or record their own submissions for possible entries, and our panel will deliberate on air as to whether or not we want to induct it into our own list. Please include a synopsis of the film and why you think it deserves to be considered for Best in Show. And just so there's no confusion, I thought I'd offer up an example. So, seeing as how Rules of the Game is supposedly a comedy, I was all geared up for laughs, so as you can imagine, I was more than a little disappointed when the film, instead of making me laugh, just kind of bored me. So, for today's exercise, I thought I'd offer up a film that's actually funny. Without further ado, for the first entry into the FlixWise Alternate Greatest Films of All Time list, I humbly submit the seminal 2001 feature film,
Dare It Zoolander.
Zoolander. That's right. Please hold your applause until after I've said my piece.
I almost did applaud. I was so excited when you said that.
Yay! I can't help it. All right, round of applause, everyone.
But I think we were talking also last time about why it is that movies get on this list. Like, my favorite movies, I wouldn't put on a list like this and be like, you have to see this movie to anybody at all.
I feel like I am in a position to say, you should see this movie. Written and directed by Ben Stiller as equal parts biting social satire and crowd-pleasing heartwarmer. An inspired story of friendship and courage that goes to show you can accomplish anything if you put your mind and pouty lips to it. But it also helps to be really, really ridiculously good-looking. The film opens in a shadowy abandoned warehouse where a cartel, made up of the world's preeminent fashion designers, are holding a secret meeting. It turns out the newly elected Prime Minister of Malaysia is actively working to outlaw child labor and raise his country's minimum wage. His egregious liberal agenda stands to significantly undercut the profits of the garment industry, and these costumers aren't going to take it lying down. They come up with a dastardly scheme to mold someone like Play-Doh or Cookie Dough, or any kind of dough, into a deadly political assassin who eliminate the threat. And the person charged with finding this extremely malleable potential assassin is one of the fashion industry's brightest stars, Monsieur Jacobim Mugatu, played in his finest role to date by John William Farrell. Mugatu is initially stumped as to who to get to assassinate the Prime Minister. After all, who could possibly be so beef-headed? Cut to a photo shoot featuring the most beautiful creature in all of existence, Derek Zoolander, played in all his spiky-haired glory by Ben Stiller. During this photo shoot, he's also being interviewed by Time magazine reporter Matilda Jeffries, i.e. Christine Taylor. Derek is very forthcoming about his history in the fashion industry and about how he became the most successful male model of all time.
I just have a few more questions, if that's okay?
Cool.
So when did you know you wanted to be a model?
I guess it would have to be the first time I went through the second grade. I caught my reflection in a spoon while I was eating my cereal, and I remember thinking, wow, you're ridiculously good-looking. Maybe you could do that for a career.
Do what?
Be professionally good-looking.
He goes into detail about his three signature looks, without which he wouldn't be the man he is today. The looks, Ferrari, the Tigra, and his bread and butter, Blue Steel. All upon first glance look remarkably similar to each other. It's only after multiple viewings, and by watching it backwards and in slow motion, that the subtle but essential differences can be detected. Derek, not being one to simply rest on his laurels, is currently in the process of developing a groundbreaking new look that is absolutely guaranteed to turn some heads left. It's called Magnum. The next scene takes place at the VH1 Fashion Awards, where Derek is poised to take home his record-breaking fourth Male Model of the Year award. However, this year he's facing some pretty stiff competition from a young, up-and-coming, hippy-dippy, freewheeling male model named Hansel.
That Hansel's so hot right now.
Hansel's so hot right now. Hansel is, of course, played by Stiller's longtime pal, Owen Wilson. Despite it being a pretty close race, Derek is still convinced that he's going to take home the prize. In fact, he's so convinced that the award is his that even when Hansel is announced as the winner, Derek still marches up to the stage in triumph and proceeds to give his thank you speech.
You know, a lot of people said winning this award 4 years in a row couldn't happen. Well, I guess I showed.
As we all know, in fashion, you're either in or out. And with this little faux pas, Derek quickly finds that he's been dumped into the celebrity consignment bin. To make matters worse, Matilda's Time article comes out, and it turns out that it was nothing but a vile smear piece designed to make Derek out to be a totally vain, dim-witted buffoon. These blows to Derek's fragile ego start him on a path towards a total existential crisis. Who is Derek Zoolander, and what is he doing in the world? If he doesn't belong in fashion, then where does he belong? He slowly begins to let these thoughts enter his head, but he isn't quite sure what to do about them. It's only after the tragic death of his three best friends, who all meet their demise in a freak gasoline fight accident, that Derek decides to announce his retirement from fashion and head back home to coal mining country, i.e. South New Jersey.
Rufus, Brent, and Mikus were like brothers to me. And when I say brother, I don't mean like an actual brother, but I mean it like the way black people use it. Which is more meaningful, I think. If there's anything that this horrible tragedy can teach us, it's that a male model's life is a precious, precious commodity. Just because we have chiseled abs and stunning features, it doesn't mean that we too can't not die in a freak gasoline fight accident.
And I just want to quickly say that I think the line freak gasoline fight accident should automatically put Ben Stiller on the short list for a Nobel Prize in Literature. Emma, you with me?
I'm with you, but it's especially tragic because it does ruin all of their orange mocha frappuccinos.
So true. Okay, anyway, upon arriving in mining country, Derek goes about rediscovering his roots. He seeks out his father, played by John Voight, in one of many glorious bits of stunt casting, and his brothers, played by Vince Vaughn and Judah Friedlander. He asks them if he can join them in working in the mines, and they begrudgingly agree to let him give it a try. This goes about as well as to be expected, which is to say terribly. By the end of his first day in the mines, Derek has both infuriated his family and caught the black lung, and all he's got to show for it is a nasty case of helmet hair.
Why do you have to come back to this damn town?
Wanted to make a new life for myself. I'm sorry I was born with this perfect bone structure, that my hair looks better done up with gel and mousse than hidden under a stupid hat with a light on it. All I ever wanted to do was make you proud of me, Pop.
With what, your male modeling? Prancing around in your underwear with your wiener hanging out for everyone to see?
You're dead to me, boy. You're more dead to me than your dead mother. I just thank the Lord she didn't live to see her son as a mermaid.
Merman. Merman!
Who am I?
After this ordeal, he feels more isolated and confused than ever. What's a merman to do? Fortunately, Derek receives a respite in the form of a fabulous offer to star in Mugatu's new fashion line, Derelict. Derek, at a loss as to what else to do with his life, agrees to do the show. Now, as you'll recall, in addition to using Derek to promote his new line, Mugatu's got more sinister plans for our hero. Mugatu's taken notice of Derek's recent public humiliations and has tagged him as the perfect person to rid of his little Malaysian prime minister problem. Mugatu lures Derek to his private day spa slash brainwashing facility and successfully implants a trigger in Derek's mind that will cause Derek to go on a murderous rampage whenever the song Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood starts playing. Derek, of course, remains totally oblivious to the fact that he's now a well-trained killing machine. However, Mugatu's evil plan doesn't go off without a hitch. Apparently, Matilda Jeffries, our favorite tenacious Time magazine reporter, feels guilty about ruining Derek's career, and she wants to make it up to him. She tells Derek that something isn't quite right about this whole Derelict thing, and convinces him that Mugatu is up to something. Together, they uncover a vast, century-spanning conspiracy. It turns out that the fashion world is responsible for every major political assassination for the past 200 years. President Lincoln, for instance, abolished slavery, which the garment business relied on to keep labor costs down. Lincoln had to be taken out. And who did these villainous dandies send to do this killing? John Wilkes Booth, the original actor slash model. That's right, folks, part of this elaborate scheme involves brainwashing poor, innocent male models who are just a little past their prime to become unwitting executioners. Once Derek and Matilda discover this unsavory history, they're able to infer that Derek is likely being used as Mugatu's latest deadly pawn.
You think Zoolander's in trouble? Think again.
What you stumbled upon goes way deeper than you could ever fathom.
And then some more stuff happens. But in the interest of time, I'll just say that Derek...
Wait, okay. Now, no, please go on. At this point, we're interested in time. There's no reason to stop now.
Listen, clock is ticking, Gabe. But in the interest of time, I'll just say that Derek and Hansel become friends. Turns out that their mutual antagonism was all a bunch of macho posturing, and they were both just feeling threatened. Is there anything a little David Bowie can't solve?
I believe I might be of service.
I think not. So the dream team is assembled, just in time for Derelict's big unveiling. And who do you suppose is sitting front and center, waiting to catch a glimpse at Mugatu's latest creation? Why, it's the Malaysian Prime Minister! But fear not, because before Derek is able to rip the Prime Minister's head off, Matilda and Hansel figure out the trigger just in the nick of time, and disaster is averted. Well, naturally, this doesn't sit too well with Mugatu, who decides that he's just gonna take out the Prime Minister himself.
Who cares about Derek Zoolander anyway? The man has only one look, for Christ's sake! Blue steel? Ferrari? La Tigra? They're the same face! Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills! I invented the piano key necktie! I invented it! What have you done, Derek? Nothing! You've done nothing! Nothing! And I will be a monkey's uncle if I have you ruin this for me! Because if you can't get the job done, then I will! Die, you way-taking scum!
He dramatically flings a ninja throwing star, which he just happens to have on hand. But before it can do any permanent damage, Derek steps in front of the ninja star's path and unleashes Magnum.
There it is.
Magnum!
Holy moly.
Yeah, baby! That's what I've been waiting for!
Dear God, it's beautiful.
The beauty of Magnum creates a magical force field around Derek, which causes the ninja star to stop in its tracks. Mugatu's evil plan has been foiled, and Derek saves the day. By the end of the film, Derek has won back the respect of his colleagues, his friend, and even his family, who were apparently watching Mugatu's fashion line at their local bar. Derek also gets a brand new BFF in Hansel, and of course he and Matilda get married and have lots of very attractive children. The end. I think I wrapped it up pretty well.
No, it's good.
Okay, but I've really only scratched the surface here. There's also breakdance fighting, balls models, Will Ferrell's run, which is probably the best part of the movie, right? Kia Mart, David Duchovny is the man who uncovers the fashion industry conspiracy, and of course the walk-off. Need I say more? Every frame of this movie has been carefully calibrated for maximum hilarity. It's fun the whole family can enjoy. Except, of course, for the extended orgy scene. You might want to send the kids out of the room for that. Anyway, this movie is really, really ridiculously funny. I think film critics tend to scoff off comedies as frivolous and trivial. But I'm here to argue that comedies, when done well, are absolutely an art form and should be regarded as such. And so I'd like this panel to consider replacing one of the undeserving movies on the Sight and Sound list with Zoolander. For serious. All right, guys, what say you?
I am pro that.
Okay.
I think you're right that it is an artfully done movie. Like, it is very, as you just described, has a very, intricate plot that's very well structured.
Yeah.
It manages to stay funny through the whole movie, which a lot of movies don't do. And it's really funny on reviewing. Like, it's a popular movie because you can watch it over and over again, and the jokes don't get stale.
Yeah. And every time I watch it, I find a new joke. There's so much going on in the foreground and the background, and... this movie, it's so good. Gabe?
I agree with you. Something that may change, all the films that we've watched so far seem to hold their place because they're maybe like revolutionary, and there's something truly spectacular or different about them. And so, I agree that we may be able to find a place for Zoolander on, you know, our own list of the greatest films of all time. I don't, aside from being really, really ridiculously well done. There isn't anything that takes it up to that level.
Okay, so
it's just really, it's really well done, mm-hmm. incredibly well executed. The you know, as far as a film goes, the comedy beats, the you know, plot, subplots, you know, act structure, everything. And I do agree to a certain extent that comedies aren't getting their due. But I think there is something, in terms of these lists, there is something that generally is not as great about comedies.
Okay.
But I don't know. Good like, comedies, like, will, you know, will get their due. And like you said, like, Zoolander is like a, you know, it's sort of a modern day classic. I think people are going to be watching Zoolander for 100 years.
Yeah, but I mean, wasn't it you who argued that the primary purpose of films is to be entertaining? And what's more entertaining than a comedy, than act, like genuine like belly laughs? That and in this movie, countless, you know. I laugh out loud every single time I saw this. I see this movie. I laughed the first time I saw it in theaters, and I still laugh when I watch this movie. And I think I disagree that like comedies are well represented on this list or any list really. And I think that's really not fair. I guess this movie, it doesn't have as much to say about the meaning of life or I don't know, like.
But it does, like the movie, like the rules of the game, it lampoons people who are elite in society.
Right, yeah.
And it observes and mocks power, which is a function of high art. So right. I don't see why this can't be on the list if the rules of the game can also be.
Precisely. And yeah, this movie has a scathing social message. So it's all played for laughs, but that's all the case with the rules of the game as well. So I don't think that invalidates it. Also, I think, Gabe, you were getting at sort of a lot of the reason why, you know, the rules of the game and Citizen Kane, Drink, and all these films in the top 10 have their place on the top 10 is primarily because of their influence on future filmmakers and future generations. And that's really hard to gauge with Zoolander. It is.
Which I think would be one reason why we wouldn't put it on the list mm-hmm. right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you're right, whether you agree or disagree, it does seem to be a large function of this list is that they're putting films that have been incredibly influential. And at this point, looking back, there's no denying the, you know, the four films that we've watched so far, there's no denying their influence on the last 50 to 60 years
right.
of film.
Right.
Whereas with a film like Zoolander, it doesn't have the... Simply as a function of time, it doesn't have that sort of cachet as of yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, I feel like how people pick Some Like It Hot to be like Billy Wilder's best movie of all those like influential comedies that he made, like all the people in Zoolander are still making films and being a huge part of American comedy. So I think this one like could possibly be picked out as like the epitome of this era.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think it's between this and Anchorman. I mean, that's a particular style of comedy on display in this movie. And I do think it sort of defines this era.
Also, like, everyone attention. Who makes all these movies is in it, too.
Exactly.
Anchorman isn't quite as inclusive.
Yeah.
Aren't they all in the fight scene?
Oh my gosh, they are, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny, too, because it's like there are, like, these different camps of, like, all these, like, comedy filmmakers, and they're all fighting each other in that scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, that is easily the best scene in Anchorman. The scene in Anchorman is about as funny as the rest, as every scene in Zoolander. So that's why I'm going to go ahead and give Zoolander the edge here.
There's also the scene after the fight where Steve Carell says, I stabbed a guy in the heart.
True, I saw him.
Oh, just another thought that came to me about why so many of these lists would seem to leave comedies out
mm-hmm.
Is I believe in there being like a right way and a wrong way to do you know, most anything, even in art, but more so than, say, other types of films, comedy can be a lot more subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Other movies dealing with themes that just course through human existence can be touted on these lists as more influential or quote-unquote better films.
Mm-hmm.
See, I said it. I didn't just use the air quotes with my hands.
I appreciate that. Look at you.
Yeah. So that could be a possibility as well. The you know, comedies don't show up on these lists that much because they do, tend to be more specific to their era.
Mm-hmm.
So especially on a list like Sight and Sound, it seems to be a bunch of Euros making this list.
Pretty much.
The films that get on that list, even say the American films, are the films that transcend a culture, transcend a generation,
mm-hmm.
transcend space and time, you know, and that's why they're making it on these lists.
Yeah.
So comedies in a, you know, to make, I think if anybody ever went out and made a truly universal comedy, I think that may be like, that'd be like the Holy Grail. That would be like the best film of all time. If you made a film that I could watch and that somebody on the other end of the world could watch, somebody, you know, and all laugh and get the jokes,
mm-hmm.
then that would be astonishing.
Yeah.
Because that would be so difficult to do.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that film exists. I think particularly like the silent clown guys, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, I think those are pretty universal.
Mm-hmm. But then would you say, I mean, I think Chaplin may even show up on this list.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is where, you know, because Chaplin is universal.
Yeah.
And the whatever his character, Vagabond, whatever his little character is, something universal. Tramp, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
But okay, so since this is our FlixWise list and not the Sight and Sound list, I do feel like we can diverge and we can incorporate our subjective viewpoints into creating an alternate list.
Yeah, well, last I checked, this is still America.
That's
we can do
right.
whatever we want.
Yeah. given that, do we feel like it deserves it could be considered among the greatest of the FlixWise? Does it include a? Can we make room in the FlixWise canon for Zoolander?
I think we can and should. However, I would not put it up as the fourth greatest film of all time.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll just make a list of movies that will be up for consideration, and we'll rank them when we're done watching all the movies.
Awesome.
You know, like we're gonna have ones that we can just kind of plug in. You know. All right. So, Emma, what do you think?
I would vote for it.
Okay, cool. All right, awesome. It's settled. Zoolander, you're in.
Woo!
What's a merman to do? Shit.
Okay. Pauline.
Merman!
Where was even half of this enthusiasm for your synopsis of the first film?
This is a very, very thorough breakdown.
I have to stop. Okay. Okay.
If you had brought a tenth of this energy to your synopsis of Rules of the Game, I think we could have swayed the audience.
Oh my god. Alright. What's a merman to do?